From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationships with it. I'm Chris Cherniak. Claire Wiley is away on vacation this week. Our show this morning focuses on a couple of local groups whose mission it is to protect animals and wildlife. First, we'll talk to representatives of Save People, Save Wildlife, a local nonprofit whose mission is to educate and advocate for the protection of local wildlife, particularly those who have to navigate our increasingly crowded and busy roads and highways. Then I'll speak with Lauren Lokey. She's the founder and chief operating officer, so to speak, of Sage Mountain, an organization that offers a safe home and sanctuary for domesticated farm animals that otherwise might have a bleak and short future. All that and some news about the EPA recently announcing the granting of up to $4.3 billion to states, cities, and tribes to address greenhouse gas emissions. Utah and the Department of Environmental Quality will receive $75 million of that to improve transportation alternatives, solar power, and reduce methane emissions around the state. Environmental awareness and education, that's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us. Aaron Ferguson is the president of Save People, Save Wildlife, and Tom Fargus is the treasurer, and they join us here in studio on This Green Earth. Aaron and Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Let's just start here. Give us a little oversight, summary of Save People, Save Wildlife, when you started, and what some of your goals and objectives are.
Sure. 2016, spring of 2016 specifically, 12 moose were killed in 10 days on I-80. And a group of neighbors got together and said enough is enough, formed a nonprofit, got the 501c3 status, and pursued UDOT for safe passage for wildlife on I-80. We focused on fencing initially because the idea was, let's keep the animals off the road. And then we realized that crossings are an essential component. We can't have fencing alone. We can't have crossings alone. We have to have the fencing to guide the animals to the crossings mm-hmm. that we put in. So fast forward a couple of years, the overpass at Parley's is placed. Thanks to the generous donations of the community, we were able to move up on UDOT's timeline for the overpass placement. So they placed the overpass in December of 18, open for business. We have continued with cost-shared fencing with UDOT Region 2 along I-80 a mile at a time over the past few years. UDOT has put in a STIP request for the remainder of the fencing to close the gaps, where there's a gap at Silver Creek Junction where I-80 meets 40. Mm-hmm. So we're working with them to hopefully they'll get the STIP request granted so they can finish the fencing on I-80 where it meets 40, and then we'll have a closed system. So the cattle guards at the on and off ramps are pending for Kimball Junction as well once UDOT does that overhaul there. So that, again, community funded fencing, community funded efforts. We are just so grateful to have the wildlife be a priority for this community.
Now, can you talk us through a STIP request, what that means and what
Correct.
It entails?
Correct, yes, a statewide transportation improvement plan. So there's a coffer for funding. So every region in UDOT puts in a request for X amount of projects and estimated cost for said projects each year. And it takes a few months for them to get acknowledged if they received that grant or not. If they don't, they apply for it again the next year for the state funding. So again, they've applied for a couple of years, but anyway, we're waiting for that gap to be closed. But in the meantime, our focus has shifted to 224, where and I'd like Tom to pick up on this, because the Kramer report published in 2019 indicated that SR 224 is the fifth worst road in the state, for wildlife vehicle collision frequency. That makes it the number one roadway for wildlife vehicle collisions in Summit County. So that became the shift, our priority shift.
And give us some numbers with respect to that. What is the fifth worst mean?
Sure.
What types of animals are we talking about? And is there a seasonal aspect to it, or is it just all year round now?
Let's get into that. SR 224, the state road, goes from I-80 into Park City, mm-hmm. from Kimball Junction to Park City. SR 224 cuts the Snyderville Basin wildlife habitat in half. Mm-hmm. The entire Snyderville Basin, according to the Snyderville Basin general plan, is a wildlife habitat, and you have a highway that cuts right through it. That highway currently has an annual average daily traffic of a little over 30,000. It's the busiest state road in Summit County. Mm-hmm. And so you've got a combination of wildlife in the region, traffic that goes through it, and that creates the conflict. Mm-hmm. According to the report that Aaron mentioned, the Kramer report, that was actually a report that was initiated by the Utah Division of Innovation and Research, funded by the Utah Division of Traffic and Safety, because they were concerned about what was going on. They did a statewide assessment, and as Aaron said, SR 224 came in as the fifth highest with 2.97 vehicle wildlife collisions per mile per year. Mm. So that's the level of significance. And there's been, prior to that study, 30 years of data collected that also established that this is an issue, conflict is an issue on SR 224. Again, recently in 2022, UDOT did another study. This time it was UDOT Region 2 that did it. They commissioned a research organization called BioWest. They're out of Logan. And they reaffirmed the Kramer report reaffirmed the level of seriousness that the 30 years of data had shown. And again, the BioWest study again established the validity of that research. They studied between 2010 and 2020 that there were 247 vehicle wildlife collisions in that time period. And based on UDOT's cost crash criteria, which they evaluate and adjust every 4 or 5 years, that cost of those 247 vehicle wildlife collisions was $7.5 million. Mm. Okay, wow. So it's a serious problem.
Sure. And when you say 247, these are documented.
These are documented.
Because yeah. Can you have a sense of? I know this is probably tough to try to document or get a number on what's undocumented,
right.
but these are documented collisions, mm-hmm. not all collisions.
Correct.
Correct.
So the experts that we've spoken with have said it is safe to assume, you know, these are road ecology wildlife crossing experts. It is safe to assume that the numbers reported can be probably multiplied by 8, mm-hmm. because not all animals that are hit with a vehicle die on the roadway. So multiplying these numbers by 8 and then multiplying the monetary component by 8, this is cost to taxpayers. If UDOT had to pay the $7.5 million, they would have a budget and line item for it, and they would be putting crossings in every year.
Well, it stands to reason, if this is a natural path, you know that you put a highway in a path. I remember I was working in the Jeremy Ranch area, and commonly we would see moose that would get confused. So I think still innately they are trying to make that their pathway.
Absolutely.
And it hasn't really shifted, even though a highway has been
put
there.
Well, regardless of roads that we put in, or obstacles that we put in, or developments, you know, whatever, strip malls, homes, whatever, there's still waterways and areas of food and areas that they winter and summer, mm-hmm. that they need to go to and from, you know, and that's daily, weekly, monthly, seasonally. Yeah. So, you know, we have to consider the big picture here, and that's why it's such an environmentally impacting component, because we have broken the system. but we have a way to fix it. We've tried multiple ways, lower cost ways, to help remedy the problem. We worked with UDOT to lower the speed limit to 45 on 224. Mm-hmm. We've placed wildlife silhouettes to help increase driver awareness, more wildlife warning signs UDOT placed with the lights around them. These are all Band-Aids. Mm-hmm. You know, 90% efficacy if you place crossings on roadways with the cattle guards and fencing. And those are really good. 90% is really good.
Right.
We're never going to fully solve the problem, but we'd like to think that these Band-Aid efforts have contributed, saved a few lives, mm-hmm. you know, human and wildlife, but we don't know for sure.
Or it's even bringing attention to the fact that this is an issue and that we all have a responsibility to
Correct.
Be a little bit more aware of what's happening around us mm-hmm. and that this is a natural wildlife habitat for mm-hmm. these animals right. and we're the ones that encroached on that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we can it is a workable system to coexist together. We just have to take the steps to fix what we have broken or malaligned. And it is possible.
Let's talk about the wildlife crossing. I'm thinking of the one at Parley Summit. Mm-hmm. You say that went in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It probably took a while for animals to like get accustomed to, like, hey, what is this? And should I use this? I'm sure there's some time.
That is interesting that you bring it up, because literally the opening day where the media was there, there is, and this is documented somewhere, but there is a reporter holding a microphone and the cameraman's back is to the sun. So you can see him gesturing, his shadow, you can see gesturing to look behind her, and she's saying, oh, we're live at Parley mm-hmm. Summit, blah, 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 and she turns around and there's literally a moose. It couldn't have been planned better. A moose walking out of the foliage. Like, is this where the wildlife crossing is that I've heard so much about?
Right.
So, astonishing.
And you can see video of them.
You can see video of them. And so astonishing to all the experts, they thought it would take, there
right.
would be a learning
be a
curve.
Learning curve.
Apologies for interrupting, but they thought there would be a learning curve, you know, for some species, a matter of years.
Mm-hmm.
And all different species, multiple crossings documented in a matter of months, which was just, you know, that's way better than expectations.
Well, it's better than any reality TV that I've ever seen, is watching that webcam and watching the mm-hmm. animals interact and go across. And it's pretty amazing, actually. Mm-hmm. And nature finds a way, right? Nature always finds a way.
Right.
Well, and we
some
were
successful
able to,
and some not so
yeah,
much. That's
right.
the problem.
Yeah, but we found a way to facilitate that pathway. Now they can cross safely. They have an option. They're off the roadway. Public safety is not at risk.
And it's the numbers of collisions in that area on I-80 have dropped too. So there's a way to quantify
right,
that. Right.
Yep.
So
and they said
documented.
So in 2011, yeah. they UDOT placed wildlife fencing from East Canyon up to Parley Summit, where Salt Lake County Summit County line is. So they just had fencing. They didn't have any crossings, mm-hmm. anything, you know, but putting the fencing in alone reduced the wildlife vehicle collisions by 70%.
Okay.
So then you add crossings and you add cattle guards at the on and off ramps, and it jumped to 90-95% efficacy. So that's remarkable.
It's interesting to note, though, that the stretch of roads from Parley's to Kimball in the 2019 Kramer report was identified as the 18th worst highway in the state. But UDOT likes to combine, if they feel they want to do a crossing or fencing it over, they'll combine it with another major project. So the major project that was happening in that location was a climbing lane for trucks.
Mm.
So they built the climbing lane. That was a very expensive project, and so they could add on, and they actually got the money from the federal government to do the overpass. So even though it wasn't, quote unquote, a priority, ranked priority-wise, it was important to do, and they got it done. SR 224, though, is still the fifth worst. We've got more and more documentation that something needs to be done there.
Mm-hmm.
What we've been able to do with the speed limit and the signage is not enough. And UDOT has said, well, we have priorities throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
They actually filed, the federal government in the infrastructure bill that was passed a couple years ago allocated $350 million for wildlife crossings over a five-year period.
Wow.
States were allowed to apply for that to get funding. The federal government did ask each state to put up some matching funds. So 2 years ago at SB2, the Utah legislature put up $20 million as matching funds. Mm. And somehow it was written into the legislation that the primary area for that would be at the junction of I-80, I-84 up at Echo. Okay, I'm not sure why they picked that necessarily, because in fact, according to the Kramer report, that location only ranked 19th out of the 25 worst spots in the state. But I think one of the problems we have, and we were told this by UDOT, that they've been going after what they call the low-hanging fruit.
Mm.
Okay? The overpass at Parley's is in Salt Lake County. There's nobody that would object to having it done. It's sort of not quite out in the middle of nowhere, but sort of out of the middle of nowhere, at least as far as Salt Lake County is concerned. I-80, I-84 is out in the middle of nowhere. They don't like to do things that are hard. SR-224 is going to be hard because it goes right up through the wildlife habitat, which is well occupied by us,
right,
a lot of people. So that is, in my mind, is part of the problem why we can't get them to move, and why recently we said, and actually I think it was I have to give a lot of credit to Carl Miller, who's the director of transportation at Summit County. He said, if we're going to do something here, we need to assess the feasibility and the viability. And so we actually got a group of all the players together, UDOT, DWR, Summit County, Park City, us.
High Valley Transit.
Mm-hmm. And did a walk along the section of Poland Farm, which is identified as the worst area on 224. Mile marker 8 is where the biggest number of animals, and to your question earlier, it is deer, elk, moose, mm-hmm, that we primarily do in the vehicle wildlife collision. And it turns out that the study that UDOT did with BioWest, it was the study that showed the other way to identify a problem is through what they call a carcass count. And it turned out that the major location on 224, as opposed to any other roadway in the state, in the county, that they looked at, had the highest matching vehicle wildlife collision and carcass count. So it doubles the importance of, mm-hmm, taking action on 224.
Right.
So we did that, and the expectation was that UDOT would get their engineers together and come up with a feasible, viable opportunity to have a crossing on 224. Mm-hmm. Somehow, and I don't know if that was, I missed the walk, so I don't know the discussion about where people that were on that walk thought the best places would be. But one was at the underpass that is currently there, the pedestrian underpass. And it was already established that because of the groundwater situation, you couldn't really do a tunnel,
mm-hmm,
couldn't expand that pedestrian tunnel into a wildlife crossing tunnel.
Mm.
So why they even picked it as a location is beyond me.
Mm-hmm.
The other place they picked was for an overpass was close to St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and we thought that we were moving ahead with having a really serious analysis, investigation, mm-hmm, of what engineering would cost, what it would cost, how much earth movement had to be. Mm-hmm. We were told some rather exorbitant numbers about what it would cost, but we finally, well, I should back up. We thought the process was moving forward from October when we did the walk, or people did the walk, to April when we had a meeting. And unfortunately, at the April meeting, UDOT came in and just unilaterally said, well, we're not going to do a crossing. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, can you explain to us why? Can we see the documentation? Can we see what numbers you've come up with that would give you the reason to say that you won't do it? They wouldn't share any of that with us.
They said it was a subjective decision.
Right.
But regardless of data and studies done.
We partnered with them for 5 years to do, you know, the speed limit and all that sort of stuff. And that when we asked for it, we were told, well, we're not sure we want to share it with you because we're concerned that you might use it against us. And that's, to me, not really a way to talk to a partner.
Right.
So It was a kind of an awkward thing. So we filed a grandma request to try to get the documentation. We were first denied. We appealed. We finally got some. Some we haven't been able to open yet, so we're still working on that. But there definitely, we've uncovered that there was no assessment done of what the cost of either of those crossings would be. One of the engineers came up with a off-the-top estimate, but one of the other engineers in an email that was sent said, we should get a consultant. This is a, you know, detailed thing. We should get a consultant to do the analysis of what the cost would be. I have an ongoing open blah, blah, you know, whatever they call a PO or, you know, whatever.
Right.
And nobody decided to do that. So they already had stopped. They already made the decision to stop looking into what needs
to
be done.
And so where do we go from here? What's next? What are those next steps?
Well, regarding the viable and feasible issue, it's up to us now. We've decided that we have to hire an engineer. We have to do the analysis ourselves because UDOT failed to do the job they were supposed to do. And we have somebody that's coming on board, and I think they're going to be here in July. Mm. And we've actually taken a closer look along SR-224, and we think we've identified another location that would actually be more feasible and viable. And we want the engineering consultants to confirm that for us and actually come up with the numbers as to what it would take. And once we have those numbers, what we take, then I think we are on the ground where we could say, this can be done, it should be done, and we'd have to try to get the county, the city, and UDOT back on board. And we need the community, which has already shown enormous support. We've had thousands of letters from people, and just recently, through a class effort at Park City High School, the AP Science class wrote, I think, an order of maybe 50 letters that they shared with us, saying this is their environmental science class. They think this is important for the environment to have a crossing over a 224 from their perspective and what they've studied in environmental sciences.
We're speaking with Aaron Ferguson, the president of Save People, Save Wildlife, and Tom Farkas, the treasurer. And we only have a few more minutes. I know that, you know, with the Olympics, you know, ultimately coming here, 224 may see some modifications in some form, and 248. Is there an opportunity to kind of get a wildlife crossing or something packaged into any efforts? I know maybe we're going down a different path here, but well, is that an opportunity? Yeah. I know that's years away, though.
Maybe closer to the major event that will happen on 224. At least it's planned. You want to know if the funding will actually come through, but it's called the Bus Rapid Transit.
Okay.
Bus Rapid Transit is going to add dedicated lanes for express buses on each side of 224. They will widen 224 from 82 feet wide to 115 feet wide, which will make it 40 to 50% more difficult for wildlife to cross. So we commented on the environmental assessment that High Valley Transit did for BRT and said, you need to address this. They did not. They did not do a single analysis, evaluation, study of what the impact of widening the road would be on vehicle-wildlife collisions. They gave it a little lip service that said, well, we're going to look at speed limits, we're going to look at signage, and we're looking at these silhouettes in this study that they claimed was happening. The study did not study 224 in an expanded mode. It looked at 224 as it exists today.
Right.
So it didn't say what would be the impact of the widening. And also the three things that they said they were going to study turned out weren't in that study at all.
Okay.
So we've tried, we've had an issue, and UDOT says themselves, we're more likely to do something like this with an ongoing project. Mm-hmm. There is that project on BRT, so we're still working on trying to, we're not saying BRT should be responsible for paying for the overpass, but it's happening at the same time. It would make sense that as they do work on the road, they could do work on somebody, you know. So we're still looking. We tried to apply for the federal funds. As a nonprofit, we can't. We have to have that application put in either by the city, the state, the county, or UDOT. They have refused to do that so far. We're still working on doing that because we could get funds, federal funds, to aid to have this accomplished. So it's not like it's coming out of, you know, just UDOT's or the city or the county pocket alone. And what better time, talk about the Olympics, how much traffic do you think is going to be increased with the Olympics?
They're estimating 80,000 average annual daily trips.
Last minute. Sorry. Aaron, I'll give you the final words. What can our listeners do to either get more involved, become more aware, give us the websites and maybe there's events or so. What can they do?
You can find out more information about our history and what we're trying to accomplish on 224 at our website, savepeoplesavewildlife.org. And then also we're on social media, on Instagram and Twitter, and also Facebook, of course, and next door for the local neighborhoods. But it really is imperative that we acknowledge the community support thus far, but we need to continue with this momentum going forward because we do need everyone's help in raising funds for the independent engineering study that will provide an objective assessment of viable and feasible locations.
Aaron Ferguson, the president of Save People, Save Wildlife. Tom Farkas, the treasurer of Save People, Save Wildlife. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on This Green Earth, and we will be in touch once you get your consultant. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about our relationships with and impacts upon the environment. I'm Chris Cherniak. Co-host Claire Wiley is away this week. She'll be back next week. In the second part of the show, we're going to continue with talking with local organizations with respect to the ecology and environment. And joining me is Lauren Locke. She is the co-founder of Sage Mountain, and that is a nonprofit organization that focuses on providing, safe home and sanctuary for, otherwise domesticated farm animals. And Lauren, I'll let you explain a little more, but first, thank you so much for joining us this morning on This Green Earth.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start there. Give us a little background history of Sage Mountain. When was it founded?
Yes, we were founded in 2013, the nonprofit, and started building the sanctuary in 2000.
And where is it?
Out in Browns Canyon.
Browns Canyon,
out towards Pioa Oakley, so about 15, 20 minutes from here. And we found the property and decided to start this sanctuary. And originally we were gonna rescue horses, and then we decided to look a little bit more into farm animals and making it our mission to provide sanctuary for farm animals and to also educate people about our choices, especially our food choices.
So what kind of animals? No horses?
No horses, so no horses. Although horses are definitely in my heart, and I spend as much time as I can with them. We have cows, chickens, turkeys, sheep, pigs, and goats. So all animals that have been raised in the food industry, and they all come from different stories. So one of our pigs fell off a transport truck named Morgan. One of our pigs was in a hoarding situation and didn't know that she was pregnant when she arrived. So our pigs doubled in a matter of 5 minutes. And we have cows that have all come from similar to like a 4-H program. So kids are connected to these animals as babies and grow very close to these animals and find out that they're going to be sent to slaughter or auction, and the kids don't want that to happen.
Right.
So we have a few of those cows as well.
Okay. So how do you become aware of this? People reach out to you now, or is this something like you read something in the news or hear about the pig that fell, Morgan, that literally fell off a trailer.
Yeah.
How do you find out about these animals?
All different ways. So we do get calls quite a bit. And so with Morgan, we found out through animal control. And so we were able to step in and get him. He was very young, so just a baby at the time. And as far as the cows go and with the kids are the ones that really, you know, go to their parents and they're like, look, I love this animal. I do not want this cow mm-hmm. to go to where I know it's going. And so the parents will reach out to us. Some of the situations, like with our turkeys, could be from an investigation of a factory farm. Mm. And then we're able to take some of those turkeys. Some of them have been farms that have closed down. So all different situations, all different backgrounds. There's been a few, like our very first pigs, which I've told the story here before, Wilma and Pony Boy, where they were, Wilma was raised on a very small family farm, and she changed, you know, the heart of the father of the farmer and decided to shut down their small business and send her to sanctuary.
Wow.
Yeah.
So lots of different types of animals. How many acres?
So right now we have 40 acres, but for the animals, the cows actually have about 100 acres. We're able to have them on a neighboring property, but also the pigs, the cows, the goats, the smaller animals have about 10 to 15 acres. Mm-hmm. And we're actually building a few more fenced in areas so we can start to rotate them a little bit, because between the pigs, the goats, and the sheep, right. they definitely tear up the land a little bit. So we want to be able to preserve that land better moving forward.
And the land setting is basically just open or sage, like pastures.
All sage, yeah, sage, some grass. Yeah, there's some trees out there, not many. We want to be able to grow some of that back, which is going to take some time.
Natural, because you're not out there irrigating the property.
Right.
It's not like a grassland pasture setting. It's natural setting. Mm-hmm. So it's at risk, like you say, of overgrazing.
Yeah, the cows is no problem. They have so much
space. And they roam about.
And they're roaming. They're out there, like 100 acres. There's nothing wrong. But the smaller areas where the goats and the sheep and the pigs, you know, the goats and sheep will eat everything, and then the pigs, bless their hearts, will go around and dig everything
and
up
because
they like to root. Yeah, so that's poses a little bit of an issue on the land. Yeah.
Well, okay, and as a result, there's only so many animals that you can take in.
Yeah, sure, so we're done for now.
Okay, and so the intent here. Mm-hmm. Is that they just live out their lives on
we do not adopt them out. They are there until they pass, yes.
And you're learning that what the lifespan is of a typical chicken, turkey, pig, cow, right? They live a while.
They do live a while. In fact, one of our turkeys that we still have from our very first rescue, her name is Susie, she is probably six years old. Mm. And traditionally in the food industry with these types of turkeys, they're killed at like a couple months.
Yeah.
So it's been just amazing to have her that long. And that's happened too with all the animals. I mean, that we have had a few pass, unfortunately, but you know, Pony Boy and Wilma Jean, they're like 9, 10 years old. And they're usually in the food industry, it's anywhere from 6 months to a year, depending if it's male or female.
Right.
Yeah.
Any breeding going on? Or, I mean, any surprises like that?
I mean, yes, we have not been breeding anyone. We're not breeding
not
out there, obviously.
Purposely.
But one of our cows, Reba, she was rescued and we did not know she was pregnant. And she was wild, like just wild creature that we were able to finally get to the sanctuary. And I think she was so wild and protective because she had this baby. I mean, she literally was so protective of herself, her body, like everyone around her. No one could touch her. She tried to escape many times. And then we found out she was pregnant, and as soon as she gave birth, obviously she stayed very protective of her baby, Francis. But since then, Francis, we have watched her calm down, become more trusting. She's finally a part of the herd of the cows, and we can go up and like cuddle with Francis. Mm-hmm. And so that was one instance. And then Harriet, one of our pigs, we didn't know she was pregnant until she was like literally giving birth.
What?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's a dad.
Yeah. And then four babies later, there we are.
So now you're trying to figure that out.
Yeah, yeah. So this, we just actually celebrated their second birthday a couple weekends ago. We had a big birthday party for the pigs, and it was so much fun. So many people came out. Thank you, everyone who came out there. And they, you know, they were born there, so they've never known anything but, like, kindness and joy and belly rubs.
Well,
and
that's an interesting
view. Yeah. So they're very, very sweet, very, just very trusting and... we actually now have 9 pigs. We just rescued another piglet named Ralphie.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. The setting again, 40 acres fenced.
Mm-hmm.
There are predators around here. Mm-hmm. There's coyotes.
Yeah.
There might bobcat. Maybe I'm sure out in that Browns Canyon there's been sightings of mountain lions. Ever any confrontations there?
No.
That's
surprisingly no. I really believe, and we all maybe believe this just to protect, just to have this thought that nothing's going to happen. But I really think the pigs and the smell of them scare off predators. Hmm. Our biggest predator have been the birds. So we hang, you know, things that reflect, like little CDs. There's things you can do to keep the birds away. So that's
raptors.
Helpful. You're
talking
about
hawks.
Yeah. Eagles
or
yeah. So. Yes. Okay. Yes. And just even like the ravens and magpies. Sometimes they can like get in there. But luckily, we've had nothing
confrontations like that.
No.
I'm speaking with Lauren Lockie. She is the co-founder of Sage Mountain Animal Sanctuary, a nonprofit located in Browns Canyon. And real quick. Lot to chat about.
Yes, yes.
But you do look for volunteers.
We do look for volunteers.
So let's talk real quick. Let's get that in. If people are already listening, it's like I want to help. How do they reach out to you?
Yeah. So yes, we need volunteers right now. So you can reach out and volunteer weekly if you like. If you want to do your own, morning or evening to feed or to clean. We also have group volunteer days on Saturdays from 9 to 11. So that's all through our website. We're doing wind down yoga, which has been a huge success, especially this last year, last 2 years. So we're pretty much full every week, and that's on Tuesdays at 6. So you have to sign up ahead of time. The thing that's been really special about that is that it really, I don't play music when I'm teaching out there. So it really, you're tapping into your senses. So what you're hearing and what you're seeing, what you smell, what you feel out there. So it's been really a wonderful experience for everyone. And plus you have the animals right there. They're not coming up on the platform, but they are.
Right. So you have a platform setting. Covered or so for shade in this hot summer days. And so there's yoga going on. And like you say, no music, just the sounds or lack of sometimes, just quiet.
Yeah.
And the sounds of the animals around us. So let's chat a little bit about that. Those animals serving as some form of therapy or for our mental health and wellness.
Yeah.
How do you experience that?
Yeah, well, I think for me, animals have always been a safe place. Mm-hmm. And that's why I got into this originally, was that I animals for me just have this, I don't know, just this special place in terms of healing and connection. When I was younger, you know, I was very drawn to animals. I spent most of my time with my horses and my dog and really found solace in that. And so I'm finding through this yoga and through just having this sanctuary that when we tap into that, it breeds more love and more connection in our our world and in our lives. And so with the yoga, I've really noticed that with people when they come out there and they're able to be and just really be in the moment and mm-hmm. be and kind of let go of all the other things and put down our masks of the day and the stress and everything that's going on in the world right now, which there is so much going on in the world right now that we, how can we not absorb that? Mm-hmm. And so when people are out there or when people are in nature or when people are around animals or even our pets at home, you know, we are able to really be ourselves and to feel accepted and to feel accepted not only with the animal that you're connected with, but with everyone else that's out there. And then when we do that, it like I said, it breeds this like compassion and love and kindness that we can then tap more into in our daily lives and all that we do. And right. I think that's so important in life right now because we can get so caught up in all the other things, which are important. Believe sure. me, they're important. But when we can come from a place of connectedness and kindness and honesty, you know, like really, I'm not talking about being in positive all the time necessarily, but I'm talking about really being in our authenticity and in our heart.
And that, yeah. that setting.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful setting to begin with. So visually, mm-hmm. it's a nice break to get away from going on in our lives. But again, the having the animals around there, and the sounds of just the animals being who they are. Mm-hmm. I remember my grandparents had a poultry farm, but the smells aside, yeah. honestly, of a jammed coop, that's a different setting. But the sound of chickens just kind of scratching around and feeding and clucking mm-hmm. and so there is something that's very quieting and very kind of promotes kind of a satisfaction of like everything's okay, reassuring. That's
yeah.
the word.
Yeah.
And so I get that. And so yeah. so there's the pigs and yeah. there's the turkeys and there's chickens and they're kind of milling about
yeah.
right during
yeah.
yoga.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can come out there. Can you just come out there and visit too? Is there
yes
there
yes we have
hours?
So we have visiting hours on our through our website. And you can come out and visit. You can come do yoga. We definitely want people to sign up for those things. You can't just show up.
Right.
Yeah, so you do have to sign up. but yes, you can visit. You know, we're starting to get more into looking into more events as we build this barn, which is a whole other thing. So it's definitely a big construction zone out there right now. We're building a barn.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
What's
so,
obviously, the barn is for the animals, but
and for the people.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
So building a barn.
Yeah.
What's that involve?
So it involves a lot. We're
volunteers for that too.
No.
Okay.
No.
You got a construction company.
Yeah, we have construction out there, a company doing this. So, it's going to be for all the animals, and it's going to have bathrooms for volunteers and. Employees, we're going to have a possible living space that someone can stay there and be there full time. It's going to house the feed, water. For those of you who know about Sage Mountain and we all know how the winters have been, it's been really rough. And so this is a game changer for that. So our hope too, and my vision is that this also provides a space for more events, especially like weddings, yoga during the winter, dinners out there. Like it's going to be a big enough space that we can have those kinds of events out there and keep growing.
Education
this.
And
yeah.
advocacy.
Yes.
Speaking about that, winter's cold. Which one is more difficult? Maybe it varies by animal. Mm-hmm. Is it cold, snowy winters, or is it like right now, heat wave? Really, we've had a pretty hot dry. What stresses those animals more? Is it heat or cold?
The heat, for sure.
Really?
The heat is hard, especially on the pigs. They're not able to sweat, so that's why we have the mud wallow out there that they can, get in and cover themselves and stay cool. the winters are, they can be rough, especially for some of the birds, but the winter is luckily enough that animals can huddle together, and just having their body heat in the shelter, and whether we have heating pads or straw or things like that, they can stay pretty warm, whereas in the summer, it's much harder to stay cool, if that makes sense. So there's shade,
right.
Pretty much sleeping.
But again, it's sage. A lot of the acreage is open.
Yeah, it's open. They just sleep. Like that hot part of the day, they are just, conserving energy, sleeping.
There's no ponds or streams running through this property, so
no.
You have to provide the water.
Yes,
them.
We provide the water. And then in the evening, this is the great thing about being out there in the evening, as it cools off, They all come out. My most favorite time, and I talk about this all the time, is that one of our pigs, Wilma, she watches the sunset every night. It is like the sweetest thing in the world, and I love being there, and everyone loves being there during that time, because they really do come out and they find their spot to lay down and watch the sunset, and it's very, very cool. So I think that all comes back to,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Watches the sunset. I'm not kidding.
Okay.
I mean, Wilma, she was one of our very first pigs. She has this, like, everyone always asks me, what's your favorite animal out there? And I don't really have a favorite, but if I really had to pick, it really is her. She's just...
She's been there
sweet.
For a long time. Oh, okay.
She's very sassy.
Sassy.
But, and my friend always says, like, I picture Wilma in, like, red high heels walking around, because she is. She's boss. She is boss out there for sure. And you have to definitely watch yourself around her. But in these moments when she is looking at the sunset, I swear she has this smile on her face. Like, she is so content, and you can go sit with her, and you'll just both just be sharing this moment of the sun setting and realizing, like, oh my gosh, like, we all love very similar things.
Right.
We love being able to be in
something
nature.
Something about that time.
Yeah, something about that time. Because for me, definitely sunset is my favorite time of the day. I do like the sunrise too, but sunset for me, there's just something very special about that time.
Sure.
And I think we all can relate to that. Wilma, sure. It's very special to her too.
Okay. All right, well, we got just a minute or two left. Let's circle back to fundraiser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have a fundraiser coming up August 24th. It's our fourth plant-based palooza, and we'll have music, we'll have food. You do have to get your tickets online. We also, which is the best part, we have a silent auction, but we also have our sponsor auction. So basically, like, people bid to sponsor these animals, and that's our biggest success every year. So you can do that as a monthly, you can do it at one time, and it's a lot of fun. A really, really great evening. So
August 24th.
August 24th, 5 p.m.
Website?
It's on the website.
Which is?
Sagemountain.org, so SAGEMTN.org.
MTN.org.
And everything's on there. The wind-down yoga, the volunteering, the palooza coming up August 24th. And you can read all of the animal stories and come see us.
Lauren Lockey, co-founder of Sage Mountain, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Interesting stuff. Website, again, is sagemtn.org to learn all about what you're doing, why you're doing it, and all the animals that benefit from it. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on This Green Earth.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Let's take a break, quick break. When we come back, we might squeeze a news item in or so. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back. Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about our relationships with and impacts upon the environment. I'm Chris Cherniak. We got a minute or two. I wanted to squeeze in this news item. The Environmental Protection Agency yesterday or so announced $4.3 billion in funding for 25 new projects proposed by states, tribes, local governments, and territories to tackle climate change. The funding could reduce greenhouse gas emissions by as much as 970 million metric tons by 2050, or roughly the emissions of 5 million homes over 25 years. a number of states are going to be receiving funding for different programs, and Utah will receive nearly $75 million given to basically the Utah Department of Environmental Quality. That $75 million will go to the implementation of alternative transportation programs, so more, say, electric buses or more efficient highways or so, solar programs throughout the state may be offered up, and the Department of Environmental Quality will use it to reduce methane emissions from oil and gas infrastructure, wells and pipelines and pump houses, et cetera, around the state. So a lot of interesting things coming out of Environmental Protection Agency in the last couple of days.